So the next, I think, is a group, or just you, Carol? No, no, oh, no, it's farmers markets. So farm to school is a marketing strategy, family resiliency, and the dinner table, that's a marketing strategy. Just growing it isn't good enough, getting it to users. The farmer's market is a paradigm, set aside for excellence. And just as some of these others are the CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. And Carol Palmer knows a whole lot about what's going on in our region from one end of the landscape to the other. She works with an infinitesimal number of different groups, hardworking, boots on the ground. And are others joining you, Carol?
Yeah, but
okay.
We're going to get to that.
Good. So there has been a proliferation of farmers markets. Rhema is an excellent farmers market. There's a farmers market in Gallup, Candy Kitchen, and those are weekly events. So we've all agreed to join the local food workforce, right? We're all going to bend over and plant those seeds, participate in harvesting. We're also agreeing to join the local food system market. That means put your money where your mouth is. Okay? Buy food from the pantry Tuesday through Friday, the Gallup Farmers Market, the Rhema Farmers Market, the Candy Kitchen, El Moro, and soon the Sheep Springs Farmers Market.
And Zuni.
Hmm?
Zuni's opening one this year.
That's good. Thank you. And the Zuni Farmers Market.
Okay, if anybody else needs to stand up, get coffee, whatever, this is a good time. So, because what I would like to do, first of all, so, Carol Palmer, Yiddishek, Irish Nishlik, Swedish Koshishik, Scottish Koshishik, British Koshishik, I am Irish, Swedish, Scottish, German, and I have learned about my heritage more through my time on the Navajo Nation. I moved up to Navajo, to Fort Defiance area in 2004, and so it's been almost 13 years, which is a nanosecond in Indian time, Navajo time, but I have learned a lot and benefited a lot from that. And as Carl said, I do travel to a number of different communities. My work now is with National Wildlife Federation Tribal Partnerships Program, and what that is my title is Education Coordinator, and I'm able to travel to any community that would like support for environmental education. And in Native communities, this is primarily dealing with agriculture, dealing with both traditional foods, the new foods, the kale business chart, and also the traditional plants, land restoration, all these kinds of things. So through my work, I'm able to see a lot of different communities in various levels of action and inaction and all of the things that are involved in the cycles that we have seen with all of us. And so my concept for today is there are a couple of things. I have informally asked a few people to come and talk because my other hat is as Gallup Farmers Market Coordinator. And I've been doing that since 2006, I think. The first Gallup Farmers Market was started in about 2003 by some people that were here with the hospital, and they had an AmeriCorps Vista person, and Carl was the only person left from any of that discussion. Because this is a transient community where people are coming and going, and this is one of our challenges when we have these conversations in agriculture, is that people don't stay in one place, and there are other factors that come into play. But the first year, the first 2 years, was run by Jennifer Mansky, who was an OBGYN at the hospital. She had twins. The next year was Amy Halliday, who then retired and had a baby. And I've been doing it since then, and I had no children, and it did not have to be a litter. So we're done with the baby cycle for the farmers market in Gallup. But the thing about farmers markets is I think initially we're starting out with a little bit of a misnomer, because to me, we just don't really have the farmers in the sense that I grew up in Michigan, and it's more industrial agriculture zones and family farms and things like that. And they're all playing a different animal. And those of you that have traveled to different places, have been to different places, have relatives in different places, you know, clearly other climates are more forgiving. We're in a different area, and there have been a lot of other social things that have taken place historically that have affected local agriculture. So these are the things that we deal with. So really, we're really more home garden markets than we are farmers markets in this area. Perhaps in Albuquerque area, those you could truly call some of those farmers markets, because they actually have people who are basing their living totally on farming. So just wanted to put that out there. I would also like briefly to go around the room and hear why you came today, because to me also agriculture is a discussion amongst community, and in order to build that community, we have to get to know each other better and better all the time. So if we could start, these two are going to be part of the panel, and anybody else is welcome to come up. So Jackie, you want to introduce yourself briefly and say why you're here, and we'll go around just briefly. I don't want to take all morning, but that to me is an essential part of what we do.
So my name is Jackie Rossignol, and I'm French, English, Irish, and German. I've been here in the area since the 80s, and I'm one of the co-managers of the Rainbow Farmers Market, and one of the editors of the Rainbow Farmers Beat. And I think there's, you might be familiar with, that's a sustainable agriculture, local sustainable agriculture newsletter. And I'm here because I really believe in working with the I think they are kind of the nexus of sustainable agriculture and farmers markets and local food movement for the wider region. And that's why I come. I've been watching Working Beauty for a while now, and they do just great work. And if you really are interested in growing local food sustainability, I think this is the organization to be connected with.
My name's Buck. I'm part of the management team of the El Moro Farmers Market in front of El Moro Feed and Seed, and across from Ancient Way Cafe. I'm here just to meet more farmers and ranchers and see how progressive people's ideas are. And I like to really push agricultural to the limit. I don't like traditional farming at all. My thing is, if you have to water it, you didn't put it in the right spot. So, and I spent 7 years with some people, Native people included, that walked a wild lifestyle and traveled with the food instead of having the food come to them. They would literally go 300 miles to get pinions when the pinions were on. So I've spent 7 years with them learning Native wild permaculture diet, and that's a huge experience.
My name is Urs. I live in the area for 19 years out in Grand Kitchen, and I'm here because the project I work is featured on page 30.
He's signing autographs later.
Thank you. I'm mainly interested in how are we going to deal with what's coming up when what is doesn't work anymore. So the project I work is only depending on water that's given. There is no irrigation. There is no other projects. I read through books and I see, oh, we have access to an acequia.
Acequia.
Or we have springs and well water. There is no projects that depends only on rain. And over the last 20 years, rains have changed in this area. There is less rain, and when it comes, it's very hard oftentimes. So how are we dealing with that? Do we plan for the worst case scenario or for in between? I don't know, but we're gonna get there.
It's kind of, besides farmers market, we have a small commercial farm we sell to La Montanita. Half our water for our commercial operation comes from rainwater captures. It works. And when we fix the gutters, maybe more than half.
My name is Jill, and I'm from down near El Moro, and I am a consumer. I've been here about 23 years, and I'm delighted to see, as these years have gone by, how much more there is that's available from those who are local farmers. And I'll support you always.
My name is Ed Silver. I am from Albuquerque, and I'm an avid Smith's shopper, and I'm here to be convinced to change my ways.
You won't require that totally.
I'm Kate Wilson. I'm a grower in Rayma area, and I'm here to learn and support. To me, what I feel is the preservation of the planet. That we as growers, as we as farmers, gardeners, can do much to help the earth.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Sadie Lister, and I'm here today because I was invited, first of all, and then looking at the flyer, the topics that we're going to share, I wanted to listen in and be part of everybody here. Thank you.
Welcome to come. Sharon.
I'm Sharon Sanya, and I'm here because I was invited. And also, I have a lot of concerns about the health of our native people. Being obese, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer, and the passion for these people that I know that have these illnesses has really brought me to considering we need to change the way that we eat. Mm-hmm. And so I made that initiative to move forward with the projects that I'm pushing to make our native people healthy again. You know, it's always a choice of our own selves to make that healthy foods initiatives in our homes. And I always feel that children really don't have that choice. Children are always told what to eat, or they see and they watch what you eat. And if they see that, you know, you're enjoying that soda, you're enjoying that bag of hot Cheetos, then the children will take that choice. And they will begin to start eating unhealthy foods. So that's why I'm here, to learn more about making our soils rich so that we can teach our children how to grow their own food and how to make that choice in being healthy. And so besides the small backyard gardens that I put in our community, the community garden, along the 491 Parkmont corridor, this is my next project where we're putting gardens in for small families that are not fortunate, single parent homes, and then working with the schools. Our first school that we're putting this garden in on the 491 corridor is Twin Lakes Elementary. So I just feel that if I can't reach out to the adults that can make a choice on how they eat, but won't, I may as well reach out to the children and show their children. Maybe their children will teach their parents that the foods that they are eating are unhealthy, that they need to eat healthy.
I believe that reestablishing our local food system is extremely important. And that's why I support Working BB. I give workshops throughout the year. And I also run the Candy Kitchen Farmers Market, and I grow all my own produce. So that's why I'm here.
I'm Susan McNabb. I write an article for Jackie's Farmers Beat called Science of Intelligent Life. And because I think it's important that we start focusing on what is working and not what isn't working. And so I am also a small garden. I sell my extra, I try to feed myself completely, sell my extra to the farmer's market. And let's see, I also, found a wonderful little byline. I'm always looking for wonderful things to quote in my article. So thank you for fruit and vegetables or prescription. If we had more prescriptions for foods, for fruit and vegetables, we'd all eliminate half of our ailments.
I'm Kim Ruff. We moved up here about almost a year ago now, and we built El Moro, and we moved up there because we wanted to do a more self-sustaining lifestyle. We wanted to grow all our vegetables and raise our own meats that we eat. Just do everything for ourselves and forget grocery stores.
They have goats, pigs, cows, turkeys.
My name is Lisa, and I live with her. Everything she said.
And I already talked, but I wanted to also mention, because none of us mentioned, like, half of the people on this side of the room are all spinners as well. We're all fiber artists as well. So we make our own clothing and yarn and wool and all of that as well. So.
Cool. All right. B.
Oh, I'm giddy from exhaustion, but everybody came and it's great. And I have to confess that I'm responsible for the terrible cultural appropriation of creating the name Working Beauty. You know, I did it when I was painting the Code Talker mural, and people were so accepting of me as non-native and painting that, having sweat lodges for me, and I just started to love the Navajo culture, you know, like so many of us white immigrants here. You know, we can say that now. Trump is one funny little thing was after years of being accused of being a cultural appropriator, that is stealing some of the culture, even though we've tried to make a really diverse and unified group out of Working Beauty. I was so thrilled to see on 491 Drive-In Beauty. Have you all seen that one? So I felt a little bit less old. But I hope you can accept the intention behind this group. It started out just to create jobs for youth, then sustain, heal, and harmonize with the environment. I pictured this as being an employment agency. But we started a CSA in my backyard, and that was really great, but it became too popular, and Gallup couldn't feed all those people, the 40 families that wanted to be part of it. So it kind of went down the tubes in a very strange way. So we had to reconnect and figure out why this food wasn't growing, why everybody's charge, which the first year would be this high, and 6 years later would be this high. It really is the truth. And we decided it was acidic water, and we were just totally unsustainable. So little by little, we're trying to figure out how to do it. Right. Thank you very much for all coming.
Okay, so B is the goddess behind Working Beauty.
Shut up.
She has passionate persistence about keeping this all going, so we appreciate her very much. Boys, Dennis. You still have to introduce yourself, because you're hiding back there.
I'm Dennis Black. I'm one of the co-managers of the Raymond Farmers Market, editor of the Beat, and what else? There's a this
topic
song. Anyway, but I'm out in Raymond. We do the Raymond Farmers Market and Jackie's Blank Fire.
Okay. David?
David?
You have to introduce yourself, please.
Oh, David Hendren, and I don't know what I am.
Why are you here?
I have nothing better to do. I needed a ride to get feed.
Feed cost and
pass on that savings to the consumer. I don't know, I'm primarily a meat producer, trying to get to the point where I can start trafficking my turkeys off of the res and make buku dollars off of them, but I don't mind eating very good at home. And I guess even more so than that, I'm just really trying to get the land to come back. That's, I guess, really who I am, to be completely honest. Because I lost all my animals before, and I'd keep doing it. The same thing I am doing if that happened again, so I guess that's what I really am. I'm a grass grower.
Where are you from?
All over. But currently the homestead is just south of Mini Farms, Cochise, Arizona.
Yeah, near Chinle.
Yeah.
For those of you that aren't on the Arizona side.
You need anything else from me?
Nope, thank you. All right. Taylor, real quickly again. We know you, but.
Taylor, consistent specialist for Cove, grower, just want to learn about the food system and be a part of positive change.
Hey, Bra.
Bra Jones, food intern, auto, Maki Benet, next one. Folks on the question machine. I'm from the Loop community out of Western Navajo. I'm from the Grand Falls region, and I'm interning as a food access intern here in Gallup. And yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm John Acker, and I live with Owl on the sustainable farm there, and I work there. I have one of the projects in the book to try and start heirloom pearing apple trees from Czechoslovakia. In 2014, I had the opportunity to visit there and found my great-great-grandfather's house in their little village in Czechoslovakia. And while I was there, I noticed there were some apple and pear trees there, so I picked some fruit. I brought the seeds back, and last year I sprouted them, so I'm going to try and start those using the biological farming techniques that I'm learning through work and beauty. And see if I can't bring a little piece of my ancestral home into this land as well. So
cool.
That's why I'm here.
Nice. Maureen?
Good morning. Maureen Kelly, and she had 20 in the shed, but Tommy Rush's chain. I am of the Tuniji clan and also born for the Tani. And I am from Church Rock. North of there it's called White Point, Tatadai. So that's where I'm at. And I am a professional, past professional mass producer of the down in Gari Ahai farm, come back, do a backyard garden on a total failure. One summer, a couple of years ago, I planted a beautiful garden. I had squash that were growing up to my knee. I went on vacation, came back, and my branches were looking like fluid on the ground, and I didn't understand what had happened to them. They were, my whole squash garden was down to the ground, and I was looking through there, and I was invaded by grasshoppers. They just wiped out everything. And I'm trying to grow a couple of fruit trees, and in my mind, as we talk here, I would like to start a group that already have gardens and just do like a circle, so we could go to each garden and attempt to revive what we have already in place. And I, the environmental people, the land management, BIA directed, telling us we need to control our erosion, which we cause. I'm not sure how I cause a 15-foot erosion. So I'm thinking, what's left of that little area, I want to plant some trees so that maybe that would be windbreakers so the dirt is not moving around. And that their bottom line is that our animals are causing the erosion. I don't agree with them. Because we do not have mass amounts of animals to cause that. So that's what I'm here for. And I am a member of the Net Food Sovereignty Alliance. So thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good morning. My name is Meg. I am not too successful of a gardener myself. However, I work in the Rainbow community. We have a garden project, but the real, I think the real reason for that has to do with reestablishing relationships. Relationships in families, in community, with the land, the sacred elements of life. And so with that in mind, we started with a couple programs, and this is all voluntary, but we started a family gardens project where we had families learn how to garden by making two gardens at Pine Hill at Raymond Alamos Board, and then and especially focused on families who have young children, ages 2 and 5 years old is really ideal because they love to work with the earth, they love to water. And so with that, these little ones actually were the motivation for some of the families to start their own gardens at home. And so that is the project that we're continuing to work with, and we'll be developing networks among the families this coming year. We've had a series of wide-ranging workshops. Pat Al shared his knowledge on biology of soil, bringing that idea as well as, you know, what's good compost, and just seeing herbs. You know, water system is really enlightening for people as well. And also had to help with COVID to bring in the cultural, some of the cultural elements too. So that's the kind of work we're trying to do at Pine Hill. But it all feeds into actually restoring the land and restoring families, community, and sovereignty. So one thing. The mastermind of a lot of the stuff that goes on. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Vernon Garcia. I am the gardener at the Community Hope Garden at the Pantry, right across the bridge. We have a little over, literally about 3 acres that we garden on, and we have 6 hoop houses. We have an orchard which has apples, pears, cherries, plums, and peaches as well. So, you know, our success is very good. We sell to La Montanina Co-op, so we do have our vegetables in the store as well. So, you know, so I just want to come and see what kind of an educational thing I can pick up here and take it back and, you know, run with it. So, thank you for having me.
Can you introduce yourself, please? Ah, that's fun.
I'm Pauline Jeanette Sosi, and Tedish Kizni Dinen Shaki Yaman Kashishin, Kudasana Dashishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishish Western Navajo, west up to the city. And, a lot of sandstone country. And I just have a family that has always farmed from what from stories that is passed on to us. And One is where my great-grandmother didn't do the long walk to Fort Sumner, and she survived on her little plot of just in hiding, and she planted her little garden, and that's how she survived. And I think that there were like five sisters, if the story goes, and that they all kind of eked out their survival. And they talk about having a knife. They each had their own knives, and that was one way that they also survived. Imagine, you know, that's how they worked. So I think maybe that's passed on to me because I acquired my mother's little knife and always carried that. You don't know. Sometimes we stopped and have our little melon, and always thought it was good memories. And well, unfortunately, I lost it because I forgot to take it out at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
How did I not see this? I just didn't have enough time to run back and mail it to myself. And so they gave me that choice, and I said, maybe I should dismiss the flight. But anyway, and I kind of said, can you save it for me, or how do I get it back? What do you do with it? And I just think they just put it in one bin. And I don't know if it's there, but yeah, so, but we have was raised on, we had animals, cattle. My great-grandparents had like 2,000 head of sheep. When I was a sheep herder, so my parents, we had like 600. And we had cattle and horses. Those days were pretty much gone. Because we've all just left home and never really gone. And it's always good to come back because our parents or grandparents had the melons ready, and there's always, you know, and we butcher. So I thought, what is wrong with us? What's the matter with us? We have to run to the store for things. And so just the benefits that farming can bring. And, you know, I just have some happy memories, just even with my grandparents. I mean, we still had to plow with horses, and you know, we would sit on there thinking we were really contributed, you know, but it was kind of like a playful thing at the time. But it was a teaching moment too, I think, because my grandfather impressed some of that onto us, and then just watching my mother work her field. And so these last few years, I ended up hunting for an apple squash, and I thought, this is silly, why we could grow this and store. So I was just trying to recapture some of that, those practices to sustain ourselves and to pass it on too. But it's good too that I had to go to my two sons to get my little cherry tomatoes and that, and you know, and so. But I used to can a lot too, and I said, it's been like maybe 30 years since I last canned, maybe sooner. But would take the apricots that we got off the trees, and so I'm kind of exploring that. I think that our apricot trees are like 100 years old, and I sit there, how do I preserve that too? I brought on others, you know, buying that, but I said, I'm really interested in grafting and taking on some of that and learning that, to save some of that into the seeds. At least we were passing on the seeds with the Navajo squash, but we all get too busy. So that's why, and I was really glad to find Working Beauty here in Gallup, and to learn what there is. And so it's just a connection that I really enjoy with the people, and Bea and her organization. So, and Owl and I like to try out some of his techniques and like that. So,
that's me. Florence? Oh, he's coming. You're going to say something?
I'm Louis. And that's so I help Pauline and when I can find the time. I'm on the edge of retirement, so I'll do that more and more. And I've accompanied her out on some of her excursions to Candy Farm or Candy Kitchen and other places. But my parents used to farm. My mother used to store watermelons, and we'd still be eating watermelons by Thanksgiving. And talking with my uncle, they dug their own well by hand in Chinle, the Chinle Valley, and they also stored food, and they grew crops at many farms, and many farms was really a lot of farms. And so I guess we'll learn to farm, and I hope we learn a little bit about blacksmithing and welding and so forth, and wait for SHTF, I guess.
No, optimistic, we're optimistic.
I'm Florence Hendren, live in Shlehanakai, the Nepa Shishin, Kia Ani Deshiche, Krapan Hateshanale. I grew up in the Tohachi and Chaco Canyon area, and here's my relative. But I'm now in the Chinle area. I teach at the junior high, and we have had a very successful garden there at the junior high this past summer. And a lot of the kids show an interest in gardening. They said, if we knew you guys were going to do this, we would have gone to summer school. But I teach this Chinle Summer Science Academy, and I said, if we have that much interest in a garden, I said, I can't do both. Somebody has to either do Science Academy or somebody has to do the garden. I said, can't do both. So we have continued, the gardening through the fall, and now we're getting raised beds. So we're going to start doing the cold season plants. So we're going to continue that and hopefully get some hoops and start planting in February, March, maybe starting with seedlings, tomato plants, things like that that you know we can begin with. Because I really think that these kids need to learn how to grow their own food. We do not have sovereignty on the Navajo Nation if we cannot control what goes in our mouth. No sovereignty whatsoever. So I keep encouraging them, you know, that pop and Doritos is not going to sustain you, but if you learn how to grow this, that can sustain you, because you will remember that and you can teach your children, your grandchildren. So that's my focus right now, is to help inculcate that desire to grow your own food, because you want to control your life and not be expecting someone else to do it for you. And then David is my youngest son, and we are trying to use permaculture to help in the farming that we do, as well as the raising of the animals. And I'll share this one thought with you. The BIA agent that was doing the survey of the inventory of the land there in the Chinle Agency, he said, this was last year, he said, he was really getting depressed because he said the inventory was showing that it was, in some areas, you needed like 1,500 acres to feed one sheep. And he said, then I came to this young man's place. He said, he actually had grass this high up to the knee. He said, I couldn't believe it. He says, in the Chinle Valley. He said, so I thought, if this one person can do it, other people can. The soil is wanting to be productive. It's up to us to do it. So we keep working from that angle, even though we have a lot of opposition around us. So, like he says, he's a soil farmer. That's what he is, you know. And that's what it is. You're going to have livestock. You got to grow grass. So that's what we are, grass growers.
Good morning, or to you. I just came to learn and connect.
Okay, so welcome. Roxy?
Hello, my name is Roxy June, and I work for the Navajo Nation Department of Agriculture, but I'm here on my personal time, so. You can call me if you need some help. I'm just here to learn what everybody else is doing. I visited Carl's garden. I visited Al's garden. We had hired some student interns, so we took them to some of the area gardens, and it's just inspiring to see how passionate people are. And you know, when you're driving down the reservation, you don't see anything growing, and you. I always tell people, there's a garden there, not shitty, and they don't believe me. So I'll drive over there and take them there. So I think it's just really neat to be around all of you. I mean, you guys just have so many amazing ideas and so much energy. So I come here to refuel my energy. But thank you for all your really beautiful thoughts this morning. It was a sad week this week, but now I feel much happier.
Yeah, there are two different projects in the book that Roxy's connected with the Navajo Department of Agriculture. She's another one with passionate persistence, driving force. So, great.
Hello, everybody. My name is Lorenzo. I am immigrant transition from Mexico, Oaxaca. I am so proud of living here because I am between the Indians. I am in Zapoteco. I work for myself as a landscape designer. My background from Mexico is agriculture engineer, but no have a recognition in the United States. But thanks God, because when I arrived here 16 years ago, I don't speak English. I learn English. I am here for to learn English or cultivate more relationships. As a gardener, oh my God, I have a beautiful experience in California. I was living in Santa Cruz, California, watching me working in the field too as an agriculture engineer, but you know, they know very, very well because no have recognition my degree. I work for a union Northside as a volunteer growing tomatoes, chilies, flowers. I did a student, teaching a student too as a volunteer because I believe in organic food. When I was born, I worked one side of the river. My father had a ranch. Animals. Yeah. My career as agriculture, oh my God, is beautiful. I feel, very well working as a gardener here too. But it's different, you know? Tropical desert is very different. But I am here for to learn more about the culture for feedback for me, you know, and learn more English and practice more English. Okay? I am concerned for Trump too. But nothing happened, you know.
Good morning. My name is Loria Eldridge. My education is for the Chini, Bachus Chini, Kanesani Dashanana, and Bachi Kachuche. We always introduce ourselves like that in Navajo. And I am originally from Wheatfields, Arizona.
and I am on a farm board there. And we have this land that we have, and it's like 1,600 acres. And a lot of our farmers have lost interest. So we're trying to reconnect, revitalize some land where we can grow our own food. And we have the Day College there, and we've been working with them with the food sovereignty policy and see if we can do that for the nation. And I know there's a lot of people, different groups here that we can learn from their success stories. So that's why I'm here today, just to learn from different people, different groups. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Stanley Eldridge. I'm my better half. I work at Indian Health Services. I was at the hospital here, but now I'm at Tohatchee. I'm an IT specialist. I like farming and gardening because it represents a balance to wires, electromagnetic radiation, and windowless rooms, and stuff like that. And I like sweating. Things like that. So I grew up in Indiana, so I've seen the 12, 14 foot corn plants and the 1,000, 2,000 hog farms and chicken farms. And I've also seen the algae filled creeks where crayfish crawdads used to flourish, but no more. Anyway, I came home after college and my wife, and we see retirement looming. So we're hoping to slip into our field down there. Wonderful farmland. We just got irrigation pipes put in from the lake. So I want a fully sustainable plant and animal operation. I'm an unabashed meat eater, but I want my meat non-colored, not full of hormones and other unknowns. So. I like mountain biking. I like riding my BMW adventure bike. McKinley County is a beautiful county. It's constantly going around the hill and the corner and saying, "Gosh, I didn't know this was here. Isn't this awesome? Some great vistas." So, but I'm here to learn. See a lot of you. Some of you at the organic food farm conference in Albuquerque and different. I have an in and out relationship with Work and Beauty. I've been on the email list for a few years, but usually our weekends have been spent going to mountain bike races and stuff like that. But anyway, I'm hoping that especially since Tuesday, that I can meet other small farmers and together can save this nation and all work toward our collective goals.
Can you rally the
coffee? Thank you.
Lynn?
Good morning. I'm Lynn Ann Beaulieu, and I'm trained as a nutritionist and theologian. And when I first came to Vermont, I came to Vermont in 1970 and grew my food organically. I lived on a lake that bordered on Canada, and you just threw a seed into the ground and it grew. You didn't have to do anything. I came out here in 1998 as a McKinley County Extension Agent in Home Economics and 4-H for New Mexico State University. And I did that for about 5 years. And I've worked for the Navajo Nation as a nutritionist in WIC, in Crown Point and Ganado. And I've also worked for Catholic Charities. I did that for 3 years. Then I worked for Catholic Charities for about 3 years, working with small agencies to get them grants to work with the poor and needy. And I did some work with people in Rama. And I was one of the original members of the Gallup Farmers Market for about 10 years. And I was known for baking my Irish scones. I'm Irish and Welsh and American. And I'm also a retired deacon at the Episcopal Church of Navajo Land in Fort Defiance. And I wish we had a hand microphone so I could hear everybody's wonderful stories, because I'm hard of hearing.
So you all can reintroduce yourself to her later. It's during lunch. Everybody can reintroduce themselves during lunch. Okay, Gloria?
I guess it's already afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm Gloria Ann Begay, and I'm saying the Ann because I know four Gloria Begays in town. And I have a home out at Inscription House, Arizona. And I was raised out there by my grandparents, and they had 20 children. And we had, you know, huge apple and orange orchards, and, you know, they grew their own hay, and we had sheep and cows and horses. We never went to the store. So, you know, it's just really has changed so much. And I am retired, primarily probably an educator. So I've seen so much change on Navajo land. And then I did spend 10 years back east in Washington, D.C. and worked in labor department, education, and I ran our Navajo Nation lobbying office. So I've been in a lot of policy kind of development work with both federal and Navajo government. And I'm going to be presenting here in a few minutes. So I just wanted to say I'm here because, just like Sharon, I'm concerned about our children and future generations of not only our people, but of course our communities and land. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about food sovereignty and, you know, what that means to Navajo and Native Americans in this country. And you'll see in your magazine here, you have the first article, so you can get acquainted with some of the things we're trying to envision and accomplish. So, thank you.
Do you have something else, Carl?
I'm Carl Lohman. I came to Gallup, a refugee from Kansas. And it turns out, you know, how we can all search the internet to discover our roots. It turns out that my ancestors, German, were displaced agricultural workers from central Germany. So agriculture really is in all of our DNA. And I think we should, no matter what diverse origins we might discover in our past or in our future, I hope we'll all make a commitment to local agriculture and to the agricultural workforce and local agricultural markets. I know that I get great pleasure at looking at my plate and discovering how much of that food is mine. You know, it's a central feature to my relationships, not just my marital relationship, but the family relationship around the dinner table. I've been in Gallup since 1973 and have always found a place to grow. I'm growing food now in Coal Basin. We built a house there in 1989, but the garden's been there since 1979. I grew food in Chihuahuita when I rented a house. My military family, my father, even though we lived in high-rise military tenements, my brothers and I found ways to help the German farmer across the street with his Kartoffel und Gemüse. So, I'm glad you're here, committed to gaining the knowledge, because it is a challenge here, isn't it? But next year, this year I was able to put strawberries on the breakfast table for 2 months. 30 strawberry plants. I put 120 baby strawberry plants in the ground last month. So I can't do the math, but I'm going to count them one at a time as they. Thank you.
Right.
So, yeah, thank you everybody for that, because to me, that's the most important part of when we get together, is getting to know each other better and better. So I'd like to have people come up that are going to be talking about farmers markets real quickly, and we can keep this part a little bit shorter. But yeah. So Jackie, Buck, Sharon, Rosalia, both of you,
and
just
Owl.
To do a quick, and Owl, anybody that has done a farmers market thing is welcome to come up here, because the cool thing about the New Mexico side of the border is New Mexico has a lot of support for farmers markets. The challenge is that we still aren't really farmers, most of us. So that whole supply thing, when people start talking farm to school and all that, I check out of the conversation, because in Southwest Colorado, they actually did a study, you know, for to supply one, what was it, 1,000 Head Start kids through a year, you need 9,000 pounds of carrots just for that little snack for one group of maybe 1,000 Head Start kids. The volume and the scale, we are in a big transitional time to where we still have to be able to grow stuff on a small scale successfully year after year after year after year. And that's where some of these other techniques, the soil rebuilding, the permaculture concepts, all these things that were really traditional concepts, all that life in the land that's always been there, and then we forgot about it with the Western industrial influences. That's what farmers markets help bring us back to, those local connections, those local things. I'd like to talk about, because each market has its own personality. Gallup is very different. Yes, sir.
Can I say something before you talk?
Absolutely.
I disagree a little bit with that farm to school reputation or something, because yes, marketing's part of it, because your typical small farmer or backyard gardener doesn't know anything about how to get their produce out. So we spent a year-long course, I guess, with Dene College, New Mexico State University, and the wonderful county agent in San Juan County, Bonnie Hopkins, who's committed to the small farmer.
Absolutely.
And we learned, yes, we had to learn about marketing. We had to create a DUNS number, and we had to create a logo, and so we could put our invoices, which I don't think anybody would know how to do. But we also learned about crop rotations, pests control, how to schedule your plants so it's ready to arrive at the beginning of the school year and go as far as you can into the winter. So I take a little bit of exception to what I've just heard about the label given to farm to school. But,
I didn't mean to label it. I'm just saying scale, the amount involved, yeah. How much can you supply to a school consistently? That's where we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So it's something that it's a constant deal.
If you get a contract, you're going to have to deliver.
You have to deliver.
That was preached to us.
Yes.
So you learned how to make your contract so that you...
So that you can deliver what you promised.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a challenge because there's a lot to do. But I don't want to go too much into that direction because we do want to talk about farmers markets. But those are the challenges. It's that scale. And farmers markets are just the one piece of that. All those conversations, because that's just one avenue for produce to be... You know, distributed,
Bonnie,
other than giveaways and stuff.
The farmers markets. And
Yeah, I know Bonnie.
Okay.
So, Jackie, Owl, anybody that can come up here, please.
How
Roxy.
How many pounds of carrots did you say?
9,000.
9,000.
Mm-hmm. And you have to store them. So I'm just saying, we have a lot of issues to build up our communities. That we need to all be working together and getting to know each other more and more and more so that we can work together on addressing some of these things so that it is possible to do this and that we don't get frustrated early on, because I think that's the challenge. And I like to say when I do my workshops that those of us that are involved in agriculture, whether we're on the consumer side or not, because we all eat, we're the most optimistic and the most stubborn, right? Because we're all still here, we're all still doing it. And we're still thinking, right now, we're already thinking about what we're doing next year and what we're going to do down the road. It's a long-term investment, and that's what we can do. So let's go down our farmers market panel and introduce again as far as, and tell a little bit about your market. Let's start at Buck's end this time.
Hi, I'm Buck. I'm the El Moro market manager. Al started it last year, mid-season. I took it over this year. Ran 22 markets this year. We didn't have that great of a turnout, but everybody keeps telling me that don't get discouraged. It's only the first year and it will get better. And I think it was a bad year because the rains didn't come as early as they usually do, and a lot of our farmers didn't produce this year. So I look forward to next year having more people come to my market, and we're going to try to incentive program to make it so that people who come from further away, we can compensate them for gas so that we can get farmers to come from further away to our market.
How many farmers do you have, or gardeners?
3 or 4, but we have about, it depends on if you consider like Lisa back there. She has goats and she sells goat milk soap, so it's not really a produce, but it's value added.
Let's say vendors.
I have about 8 vendors total.
Yeah, so that is the difference too. So our farmers markets aren't necessarily just about the produce, they're about the other products like goat milk soap, food related products, things that are considered agriculturally connected. Gallup Farmers Market has a couple of people that do pottery, you know, so all of that local flavor. All?
Yeah, I do that Candy Kitchen Farmers Market. It's been about 4 years now. And I want to tell people, if you're thinking of starting the farmers market, don't get discouraged. Every year, we keep track of our sales. Every year we've had a 50% increase. It's slowly building, people getting used to it. So, you know, don't give up on it. You know, I believe that we should have many, many more farmers markets that people need to have access to local food.
Al's market's in a very isolated area where even people who live in our neighborhood don't want to drive on our road to get to where we are. And he still has a successful market in a little tiny neighborhood that we live in. We're so
4 miles down a gravel road, so but we still manage to do well.
Great. Sharon?
I'm Sharon Sandman with 491 Corridor Markets Connect. And I started the farmers market within the 491 corridor. Our first farmers market we had was in Nashtiti, within the grounds of the Red Mesa Express. We started off with 21 gardeners, actually 9 of them were farm plots, which never developed because of the rain, because they didn't think that, you know, their corn or their squash would grow. But the other 9 had planted for family consumption, and out of that, we only got probably 4 or 5 families that brought their produce to the farmers market. I was discouraged, you know, just to see the few numbers from 21 all the way down to 4 or 5. But I just told myself, well, this is the start. There's going to be failures, there's going to be success. And either way, I look at it as a success because they made that effort to plant and to bring whatever they had to the farmers market. I encourage farmers market within our Navajo reservation because it brings back the social unity of our native people. We have lost that. We do not socialize. We do not have communication with one another.
Sorry.
So I felt that this was important for our community along the 491 corridor. So with this farmers market, we had a lot of people, you know, suggesting, wow, where's the Navajo squash? Where's the Navajo corn? Where's the white corn, blue corn? You know, and then also not only that, but their herbs was what they were interested in. So I had spoke with customers and told them, well, you know, do you know how to pick these herbs? Yeah, we do. I said, well, come and join our project next year. You bring those herbs because someone else might want to buy them. You go and make the juniper ash. If that's what you want, go out there and get the juniper ash, and so that we could prepare that with the blue corn mush. There's people looking for herbs. There's people looking for native traditional foods. And I'm only one person, and I can't grow all of that. So I encourage our community, you know, you grow the corn this year. You grow the squash this year. So finally, our producers are communicating now and are willing to try and get their gardens going next year. This year, what we were doing was getting their gardens, their farm, small plot of their farm plots ready. We have done soil testing, and we need to add more nutrients for the soil for them to grow corn. So that's what we're doing within the 491 corridor. And then with the school, we're gonna try to start our children entrepreneurship, teaching them that they can grow their own gardens with their families and start a farmer's market within the vicinities of the school grounds. So our plans are still being worked on right now. As of we just had a meeting not too long ago, a couple of days ago, and there are more suggestions and thinking that are going into this proposal. That's where I'm at now.
Thank you, Sharon.
Okay. Well, hello again. I guess where I come in is I work for an organization called Developing Innovation for Navajo Education is who we're with. So through a grant, we started a project called Native American Producer Success Project. So I can say that one of our success projects is what Karen has started with the farmers market, and with the Market Connect is how we called it. And the Native American Producer Success Project started about 4 years ago now, including this year. And what we did is we began from east to west, south to north, hitting 32 chapters throughout the reservation and doing a needs assessment. And our needs assessment asked questions about what are your problems, what are your concerns regarding rangeland, cropland, productivity for produce, livestock, and then the services that are provided by the various agencies, whether it be NRCS, Farm Service Agency, our tribes, BIA, even nonprofits. And all this information we gathered from the producers themselves. So throughout the nation, we the 32 chapters we put together, we selected a representative and continued to do this throughout the whole year. In the end of the year, we found that some of the main things that were brought up was water, no water in the area. Other things that were brought up was we need to be educated in range management, how to get back into farming, a lot of outreach, soil erosion, and then even watershed projects, how do we implement those. So coming back down the second year, we did a lot of outreach and education, mainly coming back at rangeland management, conservation planning with NRCS, because that was some of the things that was really questioned. And then we also talked a lot about how we can help to get farming back into place. And the third and fourth year, what we did is the Farmers Connect, we started with that and picked the 491 corridor as one of the projects, and that's what Sharon's working on. The other project that we did was with conservation planning. We have an NRCS program where they have their conservation plan, and then we also have BIAs. So with an agreement with BIA, Eastern Agency said that they were willing to work with us, so we were able to find funding for a couple of people who work with over 150 producers who have grazing permits to do their planning for them. So that's been implemented, and then based off of what we've done there, we decided to bring in a gentleman who does rangeland management and monitoring, and he's worked with these producers to try to get them to get out to, you know, do monitoring based on their vegetation that they have currently, sort of like pre-planning based on their precipitation that they get, and then trying to figure out how much animals they really want to have in the range, you know, the years following, and be able to do that annually. So we've been doing that, and that's an ongoing workshop that we are doing. And then, of course, we're also doing, the first year we put organization together called the Napa Farmer Rancher Congress from the 32 representatives that were selected, and then additional people have been coming together and working together to see how we can try to help implement regulations with our tribe, which has been a slow process. We really haven't done anything, but it's we have a lot of people who are who enjoy coming to our workshops. They like being there, and sometimes the numbers are few, other times we have crowds, so it just all depends what community we're in. And I think our initiative at the beginning was slow, but now I feel that we're getting the word out, and then with the help of a lot of the departments and programs who come out to do their outreach, it's helping a lot of farmers and ranchers out there to become aware of not just, you know, how to farm or how to look at range management, but be able to also look at our invasive and noxious weeds, our climate changes, and then even, you know, how to get our youth involved. So that's where I come from, and I'm also a farmer. I'm a rancher. About 9 years ago, I was asked by my father to go to a meeting, and not knowing that he was going to give me a grazing permit, you know, it happened, and it's a big responsibility. I've learned a lot through my folks, and we have a 1.9 acre farmland. You know, we're required to have permits, but I don't have one, but it's been an existing plot since I remember. You know, my grandfather planted a lot, so this year we didn't plant, but the years before I have. And one thing that I've learned is that you don't plant the whole field at one time, because when you plant, everybody comes to help you, but when it's time to harvest, nobody's around. So, you know, those are some things that I've learned from it, but teachings from my mother, I've been able to share that with our people. You know, some things I know, others don't know, so I'm happy to teach, but then some places, what you do know, others have, you know, things to add that you can also do, so it's been a really good learning for me altogether. I think invasive weeds and noxious weeds are invading a lot of the farmlands out there. You know, in our field right now, we have a lot of cocklebirds, only because my mother decided she's gonna have the sheep come into our cornfield so they could eat, you know, the weeds in there, but it didn't happen. She just ended up planting it. So, you know, those are some challenges that we have. But I enjoy it. I think a lot of it has to be with, you know, really encouraging. As parents, we have to be taking that responsibility to bring our kids into this, because if we don't teach our kids, who, you know, they're gonna lose it. You know, I have two young boys who I push out there. A lot of times they don't want to go, but I feel like I've instilled it in one of them because he decided, you know, I don't want to farm no more. I'm done with this. So he decided to move on, and he's living elsewhere now. But a year later, you know, it made me feel good to know that he questioned, you know, hey, Mom, have you guys planted yet? You know, so I thought, I did a good job, you know. So it's got to be us taking that responsibility as parents to really teach our children, even as grandparents. You know, we had, you know, years ago, you know, if we didn't get out there, my mom had a whip to chase us out there. We don't have that anymore. It's hard for us to get our kids out there, but somehow, you know, if you manage to get them out there, your grandkids, you know, teach them, because I think that's a lesson that we all have to, you know, discipline our children one way or another and get them out there. And, you know, that's the message that we share in our workshops. You know, it's got to be us as parents. Nobody can't teach them. You know, it can be at the schools and they'll have an interest, but it's a parent's responsibility. So that's what I have to share. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sadie.
You're a tough act to follow. My name is Jackie Rossignol. I'm one of the co-managers of the Rayma Farmers Market, and maybe the piece that's unusual about our market here today is this is very fresh and very new, you know, getting people to grasp permaculture and go forward, and it's still like I really like Urs's point, is that we can go on and on and on about all the mistakes we made with industrial agriculture, and it was a huge mistake. But what are we doing going forward? The Rayma Farmers Market, I think it's going into its 21st year. And I thought the Gallup Market was like about the same, and it turns out it's not. So the Rayma Farmers Market got started in the 90s, and the founder of the Rayma Farmers Market is here today, and I want you to stand up. That's always the scary thing, going, just looping back around to what Buck and I'll say, don't give up, don't get discouraged, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up. And I saw the Rayma Farmers Market back in the 90s, three growers, you know, maybe. One main grower, maybe. And yet, but Kate stuck with it year by year by year by year. And it's like, so this year we keep pretty tight statistics. And last year and the year before were about the same. In 2008, we cleared $28,000, that money that got returned to the community. Last year, it was 12, okay? And it's there's a lot of reasons for that, but I'm not worried, okay? The most important thing is you make up your mind that you do what needs to be done to keep that market growing. And you don't like, oh, well, this means that we should give up, because we went from 28,000 to 12,000. It's just maintain, just keep going. And then I personally believe that we have, as a region, reached that critical mass where there's enough people that now see that we're the future of the country. I totally agree. The little farmers are the future of the country. And regionally, meaning the Navajo Nation and our little, you know, south of Rayma area, it's, you know, I notice all the Rayma people are on this side of the room. All the Native Americans are on this side of the room. And it's like, I want to say this thing, it's going to maybe sound a little odd, but beef agonizes over cultural appropriation. Well, let me tell you about my cultural appropriation. I spent 15 years on, I have a degree in agriculture from the University of Connecticut. It's back 1973. And my husband also has a degree in agriculture, Dennis. And we like to joke that we both have degrees in agriculture, which is why we know nothing about farming. Because the way they taught agriculture back in the 70s was like anti-agriculture. It was like you took one course in soils and that was it. You know, it was never like developed on. But I happened to end up in Zuni for 15 years. And it absolutely transformed my view of agriculture. But I wrote down Pauline Sosi's name, and my mother's favorite memory of the dairy farm she worked on, she lived on, she was born in 1918. Her favorite memory was riding the plow hoe, of course, while her father did the plowing. And it's like, you have the same memory. So it's all the same. I don't know why all you guys are over here and why you're all over here. But it's absolutely the same, and it's about the heart. It's about the heart. And it's like everyone in this room has made this decision to make farming or gardening their heart, the most important thing they'll do. This is the farming. And so I just had a little list here. And I'm gonna just do it this way. And it's like I have to do. Get Jacob in touch with B. Is B here?
Yeah, she's here, she ran away.
Well, Buck and I went to the city a couple weeks ago. They wanna start a farmer's market. Somehow we got invited to help them. And there's this guy named Jacob in Zuni. He's not here today, right?
He's the extension agent there.
The extension agent.
Yes.
Well, Jacob needs to talk to Taylor Wilmot, and I want to talk to Taylor before she leaves today. She's got to talk to Jacob, because you've got it down about how to organize the health part of this, getting people to eat healthy food. And then my next thing is I got to get Jay in touch with Taylor Wilmot. Jay owns the El Moro Market. The El Moro Market is way out in El Moro. She only sells in her little grocery store organic and GMO-free food. And she gets all her produce from people face-to-face. So she drives to Albuquerque. Well, we sell at, but again, you hear that there's not enough growers providing enough produce to fill the local need. So she drives to Albuquerque and talks to farmers face to face and buys their produce. That's another way, that's another part of the huge web, is that face to face. So the most important thing maybe that a farmer's market does is that the customer comes and meets the farmer and looks them in the eye and they say, what do you mean your eggs are GMO free? What's that mean? And then you tell them what that means. And that is the most important part, maybe, that markets do. So my next thing is talk to the community pantry guy. And he's still here. I was away that people are going to run away. And it's like, we have this newspaper that promotes sustainable agriculture. And it's been in the back of my mind to come and talk to you. I'd like to interview you about your program at the community pantry. And then spread that word. Build that web. And then I have talked to Yin Mei Lee. Is she still here?
Mm-hmm. She's still here.
Jay at the El Moro Market has come and talked to, I think it was you, Lisa, about at the spinning party where we spin. I mean, we don't spin. We spin on spinning wheels.
Like dervishes?
So we have sheep and Angora rabbits, and we have this little group that makes yarn, and then we want to, some of us got together and bought a commercial loom, and we have this like plan. And so Jay, who owns the El Moro Market, not only sells groceries, she's interested in marketing local fiber. And what came up immediately at the spinning party is, well, what about Yin Mei Lee? What will she say? And so, May, I just wanted to know, are you still working with the weavers at the in Pine Hill? Raymond. So I need to talk to you about marketing fiber at Jay's store, who sells the organic produce. In other words, the web is huge, and it has all these weird intersections. And we need to all work together on this. And what the fiber, why we're talking about fiber, that's a value-added product. And it's like, that's next. When you finally, you know, but if you add value added to your markets, that's a whole other world. And that brings in people. So the my last person on the list is Lynn Anner Bolu. And I'm so glad you introduced yourself. And this is going to sound really weird. Are you still involved with the Celtic Festival?
Am I still?
Involved with the Celtic Festival. Does it still exist?
Well, we stopped after 15 years.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately.
No. You have to maintain. And we have this thing at the Raymond Market where we have music every week. We have an MC. We have a guy that plays the guitar, and he recruits bands to come to our market.
Year-round?
Well, yeah, no, just during the summer when we have the market. And so our little band, I got a fiddle and started to learn to play it, and I found myself in a band, and Martin Link came up to us and said, "Will you play at the Celtic Festival?" So Martin Link thinks the Celtic Festival is still happening.
Yeah.
So anyway, and you're going, whoa, you've gone way off track. It's amazing how people have come to the market because of the music. And it's traditional music. We play traditional Celtic music, and a lot of us are bragging about our Celtic roots. And it's like, you just don't know what it's going to be. One of my favorite stories is the Española market has, what is her name?
Sabra.
Talks about how she tried to start a community garden at the Española market. And it just occurred to her to build an orno and to demonstrate baking bread on site at her market. And that was the thing that brought in the elderly Hispanic people, that orno. They wanted to see that orno. So you just don't know what it is. So it's about what I learned in Zuni, to bring it back around and maybe shut up, is farming is a sacred act. It's a sacred act. You know that. You sense it. But so I'm going to finish off with, I got a scholarship to go to the biodynamic meetings in Santa Fe. I'm just so jazzed about this. And I got the scholarship by just, so biodynamic agriculture, and I'm going to bring this around to Al. There is a major section of the biodynamic meeting. Biodynamic agriculture is a type of agriculture that was started by a German, I'm not supposed to call him a mystic, by the name of Rudolf Steiner. And what I'm so excited about biodynamic agriculture is that I learned in Zuni that farming is a sacred act. Biodynamic agriculture believes there's a whole spiritual component to farming, and said, I will know about that. So the national meetings came to Santa Fe, and they just said, we have scholarships, just who are you and what do you do? And I said, well, we've been farming, and my dream is to become a biodynamic agriculture. They paid for the whole thing. So I'm going for 4 days. A major part of it is, how do you integrate permaculture with biodynamic agriculture? So it's all one web. And I'm just saying, think outside the box about developing. And the market for us in Rema has been an amazing nexus of people just coming to hear the music. This little band that got started, Rema's a Mormon community. And you know, they're very westernized. You know, you just drive to Gallup and work and then drive back. You know, the idea that the community is supposed to be self-supporting, that's not the American way. We have to reverse. We have to turn the aircraft carrier around. But you guys already know it, and over here they're figuring it out. So, and I guess that's it.
I have to say, Jackie's.
I'm the other co-manager or grunt in the field, whichever case may be. One of the things is about your farmers markets is, make your farmers markets your people's farmers market.
Yeah.
If your people think that that market, or they believe, or however you do it, if it's their market, not the manager's market, not somebody from Joe Tunky Donkey, get that it's their market, the people show up. And especially if you can tie it into the community, like Jackie was saying, tie it into the music, tie it into their traditions. We're in front of the museum. The reason we tied it in there is because it's walkable. People in town can walk over there and get their groceries. We have people walking over before we even get really set up and dropping off stuff. We come to set up in the morning and there's tubs of stuff sitting there and we go, who brought this? It's making the people, making the community the market. Making the people in the community say, hey, Raymond Farmers Market, that's my market. And that is what brings a lot of the growers, will bring in more people. Over the last few years, we've had great growers, and we've lost them. We've had people on our farm, we struggle constantly with water. So we did a kid's garden this year. We got a scholarship to do that. We did a kid's garden, and we had to haul water, but we still got it done. We didn't have 12 or 14 kids. It's a start. So it, by taking and saying, my market didn't do this because I only had X amount of, no. It was, you made it for the 19 weeks or the 12 weeks or whatever amount of time you said this is what the market's going to be. And some days, we're sold out by 10. We open up at 10, at 10:45, we're out of produce. Mm-hmm. You know, some days, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're buttoning everything buttoned up, we're all done, and we got people showing up going, well, can't I buy something? So the three things that I find is, make the market theirs, make the growers local, and introduce them to your community. That's, if once the people start to understand that, hey, I know Sally over here that grows the tomatoes, or I know Al grew a bunch of tomatoes, or Hobbit Gardens put all these greens out. Kate comes up with her greens, and everybody comes up. It's not a whole lot of vegetables, but they're there, and we're there every weekend. Consistency and understanding that we're there for them. And when we get into that part of it, then we get people. We have a local boar feast every year that seems to be really good because people start coming in and going, wow, I didn't know you could cook quinoa that way, or I didn't know squash would taste like that, or I didn't know that heirloom tomatoes had a different flavor than those cardboard things you buy in the store, or, you know, and what makes the food? You know, how does that produce or that product show up? We have a thing in our market, nothing is commercially made. You have to be handmade if you're a crafter. It has to be hand-grown if you're growing it. No bringing produce in from somewhere else. We pull people from the Laguna Acoma. We have people from there bringing all their produce to our market to sell. So the thing that I would like to get across is don't try to judge what's going on by a set number or a set standard, because no two markets are alike. Buck's Little Market out El Moro, they have like what, four vendors, something like that?
Five.
And Owl has 5, 6, or 8, depending on the season. We can get up as many as 15 sometimes, but we also take in the considerations. We have Founders Day. So we set up in Founders Day. We set up for the Ancient Way Fall Festival. We take and be a presence in everything that we can be. And we found that we have people coming to us and saying, oh, thank you. You did something that didn't involve the church. Or you did something that didn't involve labeling all these people. Or when we were doing the heart healthy thing for the Raymond Navajo health program, we made people available to help them with their growing. How to and use your talents to take and assist others in what they're doing. And then over that period of time, it will grow your market. People will start saying, oh, my market at Raymond is so good, or my market at El Moro, or my market wherever. And then you'll have quality people, because they're there because they want to be. you'll have vendors that are there because they have a face-to-face relationship with the people. Some of the problems we have in our system is we don't have a way that we can produce meats. We don't have it that isn't hauled hundreds of miles off to be done. We don't have the ability to take and have a lot of water over the last year or so, over the last 5 years, to take and grow giant rows of stuff. So diversity and understanding that the diversities is such and helping others cope with their diversities, and then also making the knowledge or the education you get for goofing things up and able to say, that might, that'll work, but did you take into consideration the aphids are going to get you, the white flies are going to get you? If you try, I want to grow all winter. Okay, I'd like to see that crop of bugs you're growing next year. But so it would give them a heads up, and they will have less chance of failing, and it will bring people in. So that's pretty much what my job is doing, is running out to see people, helping out with whatever I can, doing whatever I can to bring in people to take and understand that the farmer's market is an entity that is there for them. And the farmer's marketing is how we help them market their product. How do we tell them, okay, you have a nice lot of crop, but your display sucks. or the way you're presenting yourself is not going to work. People, I don't understand why people walk around me. Because you can't be a grump sitting behind your basket and just say, well, nobody's buying my stuff. No, you got to ask the people. We put out some products that 4 years ago we were told were crazy because some of the salad mixes we have, like Wild Thing, everybody thought was sort of, but now it's one of our hottest sellers. And it's pretty much a Papago mix. And if you don't know what a Papago mix is, it means it's mostly weeds. It's stuff that we know grows, that we don't have to tend, and we've been pushing and helping also help with seeds. And pretty much that will take care of most of all your things that are going on. If you're a grower and you need assistance and you can go to the farmer's market and get it, or get with the Farmers Marketing Association or whatever, and get help, that increases your vendors. So
okay.
That's about it for me.
Well, I think we're going to need to be wrapping our part up for sure, because we're way over time. But I'd like to say, if you've been at church weddings, we've got the family of the bride and the family of the groom, and we just bring everybody together.
Everybody.
I noticed the room was divided a long time ago, and I wanted to do something about it.
Two other things that I've thought of is if you run into resistance, in particular with the native growers, I ran into some resistance where they didn't want to sell their produce. They wanted to give it away. And one thing that I encourage them is to sell, go ahead and give some of it away, but save some of it to sell and invest that money in their farm. So their farm is helping others. You can grow more food. You're investing in your farm with the money that you make. And then you can share more that way too. So the other thing was competition of markets. The more markets there are, the better.
Absolutely.
For the consumers as well as the producers. I have the option to sell at the Rayma Farmers Market, the Candy Kitchen Farmers Market, and the El Moro.
And the El Moro Market and La Montanita, and
right.
It just
technically you could come to Gallup too.
Yeah. So as a grower,
going to drive that many.
You know, I
places.
Have a lot of options, and if I have abundance of crops or whatever, I have a lot of options to sell my stuff.
Come to Sheep's for expense.
Thank you.
Yeah, because they're during the week also, so.
So I want to interrupt just to help folks whose tummies are rumbling and how we're going to manage. And those folks who are wondering how we're going to manage time. We'd like to hold all questions and comments. I think some of this could occur in a round table setting, and the table we want to be around is the lunch table. So Gloria Ann Begay has agreed to speak with us while we eat. That's going to save us some time, and we'll also have some social opportunities, you know, round table type things around the table. So can we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Give these folks applause.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.